This episode of The Huddle is brought to you by SeatGeek, our presenting sponsor and by far the best way to get great tickets to any event. If you want to hit a game, a concert, anything, if the NBA holds a coach's battle royale fight to the death, SeatGeek will get you in. Just download their app, look up the event, and you'll have access to every ticket at the best possible price. Every seat you secure through the SeatGeek app is 100% guaranteed to work. You don't got to worry about that. And you don't have to worry about any hidden fees like you would with super shady StubHub. What's more, right now SeatGeek is actually paying Huddle listeners to use their product. Hit the Me tab on the app, enter promo code GSW, and you'll get $20 off your first set of tickets. SeatGeek, great tickets, great prices, no BS.
Thompson, back over to Bogut. Bogut, middle of the floor. Pounding the dribble. Takes a three. It's good. He hit a three. Andrew Bogut with the shot clock winding down. Knocks down the triple. And sets Oracle ablaze.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in. Where's Huddle with me, Bram? And joining me, per usual, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And our resident insider, the San Francisco Chronicles beat writer for the Golden State Warriors and a giant Ice Reynolds fan, Rushy Simmons.
I do like Ice.
I remember. You're the only person who knows who the hell he is, so I'm sure somewhere he's really appreciated.
But that was a great story, though, right?
Everybody was
in on it.
There is no question how amazing that story was. Actually, anything I can hear about Scott Skiles, I genuinely really appreciate. The Warriors have been playing so phenomenally well that as much as I'd like to explore both Scotty Skiles and Ice Reynolds, let's go ahead and push off towards the insider's report, gentlemen, and let's start this way. Injury updates. Right now, we've got at least two injuries, the most severe of which is Andre Iguodala's left ankle, something he twisted in the win against Portland. What's up?
Yeah, it's not good. It's going to be at least another week before we hear if he can even get back on the practice court. Usually, the Warriors tell you in 2 weeks that it's not good enough for him to come back, so he's not going to, and he's going to miss some more games. And we're seeing the difference on the court already. Their defense is not as good. Right. The second unit is not as good. And this is what the Warriors have to go through if they don't have Iguodala.
High ankle sprain? I mean, is there any specific actual diagnosis? All they're giving us is just the term ankle sprain.
It looked high to me. That's what got me most worried.
And Scott has an MD. I don't know if you knew that.
I think when Harrison went down at Phoenix earlier this year, it was much more obvious to me. He immediately grabbed almost at his calf. It was so high. This one was not the same for me. And I haven't talked to Iguodala yet. He has a week from his injury before he has to address the media, so he'll wait. So it'll be Friday in Dallas when he talks. I don't know if it's a high ankle sprain. I know the x-rays were negative. The MRI showed nothing but a sprain. But I also know that he's really important, and it doesn't matter how bad it is, that they need to be cautious with him, and that's what they're going to do. If it's a 2 to 4 week injury, I'm guessing it's going to be 5 for him. If it's a 4 to 6 week injury, I'm guessing it's going to be 7 for him because he's that important.
So they won't fall into the trap of pursuing the 73 wins. They'll recognize what the hell is important.
Yeah, 73 doesn't matter at all.
Let's assume that he is hurt for a 2 to 3 week stretch. Does this impact their 73 win pursuit?
It does. It does, because they're still going to be underdogs in 2 games this year.
You got to
realize that they can only lose 3 the rest of the year for them to get there, right? And we think about the
Warriors.
Actually,
they can only lose 1 because I guess 75. So okay. it's getting a little bit close here, and I don't feel like buying your stupid-ass dinner, so really just 1. But go ahead.
I would like that dinner. Plus, I think 73 is probably the number everybody else is paying attention
to. Which is weird.
Yeah,
I mean, you think my bet would be more important, but well, I mean, whatever.
But they have to play flawlessly for the next 16 games. They can't lose games, and they play 2 at San Antonio where they never win, where they haven't won since Tim Duncan's been in the league. So,
and where the Spurs haven't lost this year.
Right. That's a remarkable point. So we're going to go through this season where everybody's thinking about, could the Warriors win every home game, be the first team in history to do it, and somebody else might do it. Could the Warriors win 70 games, 73 games, and somebody else might do it?
Yeah.
We're all paying attention to what the Warriors are doing, and San Antonio's doing the exact same thing, just a little bit south.
That is, I say, 60-40 true. Here's why I say that. One of the refrains you hear over and over and over and over and over again is nobody's talking about the Spurs. No one's paying attention to what the Spurs are doing. By definition, just by throwing that out there, yes, we are talking about the Spurs, and we are recognizing
that. But then we don't say anything else about them. We talk about Steph Curry being amazing and having the best year after an MVP ever and how he dances afterward, and we talk about how Klay Thompson is brilliant but doesn't get any attention, how Harrison Barnes is a free agent, and how Draymond Green became an all-star, and how Andrew Bogut hit a three-pointer the other night and might be the defensive player of the league. We talk about Andre Iguodala being the sixth man of the year and about Sean Livingston's importance.
So you want a follow-up point for the Spurs to make it legit?
Who are we talking about with the Spurs?
I'll give you one.
Kawhi Leonard is one of the top five players in the league. That's it. That's all you hear.
I'll give you a second one. I hate the Spurs. Does that make you feel any better?
No. I mean, that proves the point. Nobody is talking. The talking point is nobody's talking about them.
And
what else do you know about them?
Right. And I mean, to be honestly, do you guys really believe in them? I mean, do you really give them a shot?
Yes.
I'm terrified of them. Really? I'm the only person sitting at this table who's gone on record to say that they are the people I am most afraid of by far. And it's not the fact that Tim Duncan's there, nor is it Kawhi Leonard. It is Greg Popovich. He terrifies me.
Your pronunciation is amazing, but you're right that you do not want to play Greg Popovich in the 7-game series.
No, absolutely not. If anybody can make the adjustment that could somehow figure out what Steve Kerr is using to destroy the rest of the league, it is going to be Greg Popovich. So I have given him their props. I'm tired of hearing how underrated they are, but I understand where you guys are coming from, which leads to the second injured warrior, Azeli. What do you got for me on him?
He's ahead of the game. I think he was ahead of the game. Two crutches to one crutch to none. He's back on the court before anybody thought. We'll get the final update on March 21st in Minneapolis. But I actually think he's right. He says he'll be back on the court before the playoffs start. I think he'll probably play a week before the playoffs, and that'll be huge for the Warriors.
I thought I'd be able to do this without getting distracted, but I got to at least bring it up. Let the record reflect that Scott's wearing a Washington Wizards hat while we're recording this podcast, which
looks good, man.
Makes me so disgusted.
I mean, it looks good.
If there's a weird tussling sound, it's because I've punched Scotty in the face, which I don't want to do, and I think he could actually beat my ass in a fight. I just would have to hit him and run. You know what I mean? It'll be awkward for all of us. So anybody out there who thinks that's inappropriate as well, please send us an email and let this fool know it's a Warriors podcast.
Best backcourt.
Oh my God.
Everyone should know that we're all rooting for Randy Whitman to be fired and the Wizards to make an insane run. Once you get in the tournament in the East, you could actually in the finals against the Warriors.
Who gives a shit?
If it's D.C. Oakland, that would be the greatest finals ever. Let's make that happen.
Yeah. You know what? I take that back. If there's a weird tussling sound, it's actually Rusty and Scott finally making out because they get to talk about the Washington Wizards sporting scene. Who cares?
Well, I'll take Toronto or Chicago or Atlanta or Boston also, but but anything other than Cleveland is basically what I'm rooting for. But DC would be pretty cool.
That makes me feel a little bit better. Turning our attention back to the injury updates, one last one that should be an absolute non-starter. A while back, Steph gave us a scare. They had an ankle injury. Certainly seems to be 100%. Is he?
Yeah, he's 100%, or as close to it as he will be during the regular season.
Yeah.
He learned a lot when he went through the ankle injuries early in his career about maintenance, about how to keep up with it. And he does such a fantastic job, even when he's not hurt, of taking care of all that stuff. And so I think he was ahead of the game when he actually did get injured. And this one wasn't near as bad as normal. And it's kind of cool now when you talk to him because he's almost like a doctor explaining it when he talks about the ligaments and the inside outside and all that stuff. He knew it wasn't that bad, and he's playing like it.
He's a smart guy, and he's probably received more information on ankle injuries than anybody who is not a podiatrist, right? I mean, so of course he can explain that stuff in great detail. All right, enough injuries. I'm glad to hear that everybody's kind of progressing. The Iguodala thing is a little bit concerning, but it is what it is, right? I mean, one of the upsides there is that they've built enough of a lead where certainly we're going to be in the playoffs, and we'll probably have at least a 1 or 2 seed, so it's not something to be too concerned about. All right, Mo Buckets. To start off the year, Mo Spates, I won't say but he was he couldn't hit the side of the backboard with most of his 15-footers, which is essentially the source of all of his points. Since Steve Kerr has been back, he's been a lot better, and that's been really true over the last couple of weeks. Against Phoenix, he put up a season-high 25-9 with a block and two steals in 18 minutes, which is not an easy thing to do. Looked good against the Thunder in Oakland, and even last night had 13 off the bench. What is it about Kerr that changes this guy's offense?
It's remarkable. A lot of guys, like, you saw the transformation between Luke Walton and Steve Kerr, that they played a lot freer under Luke Walton. That was their guy. They knew that they weren't going to get yanked from a game. If they missed a defensive assignment, it was okay. It was not okay, but it was going to pass for now. Most Bates is not the same. Steve Kerr benches him, doesn't play him sometimes. And for some reason, when he gets called on by Steve Kerr, he's fantastic. The only thing you can think back to is he made a New Year's resolution that said in 2016 he was going to be better. And he has been. If you look back at his numbers in 2016, he's been great. And he had this great quote about, I don't even remember what happened in 2015. And then he caught himself and goes, oh yeah, we won a championship. But in 2016, I'm going to be better. And the fantastic thing is he has been. He's won single-handedly two games by himself in 2016.
I thought you were going to tell me that his New Year's resolution was to drain assist, which, you know, I mean, yeah. Mission accomplished. That is successfully done. So, I mean, I don't have the kind of hoop knowledge to be able to look at and see what kind of things they're doing differently for him.
Well, he's playing center instead of power forward.
Strategically,
now.
Though, I mean, are they giving him more looks in this offense?
He's playing a different position. It's fantastically different in the Warriors system.
I hate you so much. You didn't have to use the phrase fantastically different. You could have played me with kid gloves. Like, I didn't notice anything at first either, but then I started looking a little bit closer, kind of thing, you know.
I'll coddle you a little bit. I didn't notice at first either. And then Steve Kerr said, hey, look.
Different position.
This dude's playing a different position now.
And you thought to yourself, I'll have to explain this to Brand, which I really appreciate. Let me whisk us away, same topic, different angle of it. I mentioned to start it off is that, you know, to start the year, Mo was cold, remarkably cold. His offense relies on the 15 to 18 footer. He couldn't hit it at all. Did he ever get down on himself? As far as you could tell, did he lose confidence?
I'm not sure Mo does ever lose confidence. He goes into these sessions where he thinks somebody else is the problem, but it's certainly not him. It's how many minutes does he get? How many shots does he get? Do they take him out because of a defensive problem? But it's never his fault. He walks around with remarkable confidence, and that glow that he has all the time is what is there.
He strikes me as one of these guys who is able to kind of shut off the part of your brain that is constantly kind of speaking to you and trying to tell you, like, you know, hold your elbow in, or, like, you know, use your legs on your shot. It just, to him, it's just muscle memory. He doesn't get it. He just kind of does his thing.
I'll take that a step further. He seems to me like the type of person who may not necessarily be smart enough to take any of this hard. But, you know, you don't have to follow up on that.
I like to say, you know, the irrational confidence type guy.
I don't like to say too stupid to take it hard. But again, you can, you know, tomato and tomato kind of thing, right?
He's a good shooter. He thinks his shots are going to go in.
Oh, play in the middle road. That is terrible. Last night, Mo hit like four or five shots in a row. Camera pans over to Draymond, and he is going batshit. He was as excited as if he had hit the four shots in a row. And what it made me think is, any independent relationship between those two? Are they close friends, or is that just indicative of how supportive this bench generally is?
All the big guys spend time together, as do the guards, so there is a relationship there. But I think if you saw anybody reacting to most Bates, they would all be the same. The Warriors love it when most Bates makes shots. It is remarkable how much they cheer for his shots and how much he cheers for his own shots. Oftentimes, if you catch him and you stay with him as he retreats on defense, he's talking trash to his own bench about how he made shots. So it's fantastic.
Is this sustainable, or is this just something that is a most Bates kind of hot streak?
Sustainable.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because we've seen it before, right?
Yeah.
Like where he's gone through these stretches and you think he might never miss again, but then he does, and he does for a long stretch. So my thought is that it'll probably lack at some point, but man, he's on a roll right now and playing confident, which is huge for him.
couldn't help but notice that you haven't called any of my questions interesting yet, which is a little bit upsetting.
Well, if you ask an interesting question,
like
I might say it's interesting,
like
or
really,
even a good question.
Really a lot of interesting questions, but I guess we'll see if I get that designation
later
on.
See if you come up with one.
There's something about Mo that just strikes me as entertaining. I don't know what the hell it is. I don't know if it's like the sly smile that never leaves his face. I don't know that it's the fact that he's clearly a mouth breather and his mouth is always open. Whatever the hell it is, it really entertains
probably
me.
Probably not going to get you the good question.
That's fair enough, but it leads me to this. Give me a Mo Spade story. I mean, anything. Whatever the hell pops into your head, tell us about him.
There's a ton of stories about Mo. I guess it's okay to share that he always thinks that Ethan Sherwood Strauss is drunk. And so every time Ethan walks into the locker room, he says, "Are you drunk?" And then in Portland, where you're legally allowed to get high, I think is the rule. You're allowed to smoke, at least. I'm not sure if you're allowed to get high. I'm not sure. But when we were in Portland, when Ethan walked in, instead of asking if he was drunk, he said, "Oh, you're high tonight, too?"
I like that. Actually, yeah, that's really solid. Aggressive. Do they have a friendship, or is he just talking big shit to him?
I think it's just a fun back and forth. Ethan asks him questions that are interesting and entertaining.
And better than
yours. Sometimes, yeah, drunken and gargled. And Mo recognizes that and then calls it out.
Every time Ethan asks one of those questions, do you interject to say, "Interesting question, Ethan. Really nicely done"?
I do not, but there is now like a really uncomfortable thing between Ethan and Draymond that like ends conversations. Have you noticed this?
No. Nope.
That Draymond will not answer his questions. And so Ethan spouts out another question right away, and so it's like one word, it just keeps going back and forth, and it ends every interview.
Was he the guy who had the Michigan shirt on the other day when Draymond got real distracted?
That'll be Ethan's next big thing. Ethan was in Boston at the Sloan Conference during that, but now that he's back, like he might start wearing Michigan stuff around, or maybe Ohio State, just really go at him.
There's a drastic conversational switch and a remarkably random question. And I've been wanting to ask you this for the last few weeks, but I wanted to make sure that I was right. From what I can tell, every time the national anthem is being played or sang or whatever it is, Andrew Bogut's not out there. Am I right on that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
What the hell is going on there?
Well, you know who his best friend on the team is?
Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're taking pregame dumps together. So, no, this.
Okay, wait a minute. Take us through that. What do you mean by that? I mean, obviously, I'm sure that we can all figure out what the word dump means, but give us a little explanation.
You're exactly right in your observation that Bogut recently has not been there for the anthem more often. But this has been a thing for Harrison Barnes for years.
What has been a thing?
As soon as the anthem starts, Barnes leaves.
And
he goes to take his pregame dump. And it became a thing. Like, they would go, it would last all the way through pregame introductions. They would introduce the starting lineup, and when Harrison Barnes would come out, the players would ghost hand five each other and dance like as if he was coming out, and he wasn't there still because he was still taking his pregame dump. Andrew Bogut, at some point this year, I think, it may have happened last year, but I didn't notice it. I think it was this year, realized, oh, we're allowed to go take pregame dumps. So he now goes. And so the list looks terrible. Like, if Looney is in the D-League and Iguodala is hurt and Festus is hurt, it's like they got eight guys out there during the anthem
right
now.
Right.
And then they come out for pregame introductions, and the two guys are not there. Steph Curry goes out while Klay is being introduced. So it looks like they got two starters.
Right. Yeah, hell yes.
And meanwhile, half the starting lineup is in the locker room having a dump.
There is no way I could do that. It would make me so nervous. Like, to have to take a dump within that, like, specified time frame. You know, like, because if you, like, whatever happens, maybe you have, like, a wiping error or something like that. You know, like, it doesn't come quickly.
No,
now the whole arena, you got 19,000 people are waiting for you, man.
I can't relate with you on the wiping error.
What happens? They usually happen.
If I'm Harrison, I'm pissed that now Bogut is joining me in the stalls, because I know in my office environment, if I'm in there, when somebody else comes in, you're like, really? You're really going to be in this stall next to me?
Right.
Like, if I come in and someone's there, I just turn around, you know, do it.
And Harrison can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he takes his shoes off and does the whole thing for his pregame dump. So, like, now, like, you've made yourself at home, and now a dude's coming in. Like, I don't care how close you are and how much fun you guys have together and how much fun you have on Twitter, but this dude is sitting down next to you.
I don't know about that.
It's weird. We've hit the apex of the huddle. I mean, I don't think I'm ever going to get a story that I've enjoyed more than that, and it's unfortunate that
we did I explain the pregame dumps well enough?
No, that's fantastic. I'd explain more about the wiping errors, but we don't really have to get deep into that. We don't have the time. Last Insider's Report, you wrote an article that said that right before Kerr's first year, he creates a video called Strength in Numbers that he has Marv Albert voice over, and that it was designed to get the team ready for the us above you kind of concept. Did you see that video? And I think I may have heard of it, but totally forgot. Tell me about the video. Tell me about the impact on the team. What was that?
Yeah, it was a cool situation. Steve Kerr had done some pretty remarkable things already. Like, he had taken a 48-hour span to fly to Australia just to show Andrew Bogut some video of things that he would do with a center and flown back. He had gone to meet with Steph Curry, talked to Klay Thompson, met with Draymond Green in Las Vegas. But this whole time, he was coming up with this video of Strength in Numbers. We have too many good players for this lineup. We have too many good egos for what's going to happen here. And basically, what he was doing was setting up Andre Iguodala for, you're going to be the sixth man.
Huh.
And so he had Marv Albert do this video, and it was part funny, part serious, but the whole thing was, hey, you're going to have to take a lesser role now. And when you do, we're going to accomplish great things. And when that happens, you're all going to get your money, you're all going to get your All-Star bids, your Defensive Player of the Year awards, all this stuff. All this stuff will happen, but first, you have to step back and strengthen numbers. And it's kind of fascinating because there have been, since 2009, I've covered the Warriors with them having lots of logos and lots of team themes, and I've never seen one stand up throughout the year. And he started Strength of Numbers after a wine visit in Napa with the coaching staff, and next thing you know, that was their playoff rally cry.
You know what I love about that? Steve Kerr has had the most successful two-year run in coaching in the history of coaching or basketball, right? And when he's asked about it, he correctly points out this team was already set up. They were phenomenally good. And I am remarkably lucky to have had the talent that I was handed. And he's not wrong. He's absolutely right. But also, if you pay attention, this guy did everything he possibly could from the moment he was even recruited to be a coach. Right? He supposedly came with a meeting with Lacob and had a PowerPoint presentation and exactly how he wanted things to go. He visits Bogut in the offseason. He puts together a video with Marv Albert's help. This guy has gone the extra step every single portion of his career. So certainly he was blessed with talent, but he also brought talent and preparation and legitimacy in a way that most new coaches wouldn't even have any idea how to approach. That's awesome, man. I mean, this guy is next level.
He is. And like you talk about his, I think it was a 78-page PowerPoint presentation, like where he was recruiting the Warriors. They thought they were going to Oklahoma City to meet him, to recruit him, and he was recruiting them. Like, fascinating, right? But if you talk to Marv Albert for a couple seconds, you start hearing about all these videos that they made during the 8 or 9 years that they were together, and you talk about the things that he did for Q, Bruce Frazier, for all his friends in the league, and you see hilarious, well thought out stories that he would put into these things. They were like Wayne's World Productions, but they were well thought out and funny, and like Saturday Night Live would love to have these things on their air.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he understands how much the small detail really matters. And it's like, I'm sure he could have gotten somebody who was probably had a pretty good voice to do the voiceover for the video. But he knew having Marv Albert takes it to another level. And it's a small thing, but it actually means a tremendous amount to having the impact that he wants it to have.
Think about the three levels that he's operating on. Right, he was privy to the two best coaches who the NBA has ever seen, so he knows how to speak to players. He was a phenomenal announcer for a long time, so he knows how to produce things and how to present them as a package to an audience. He was also a player for a remarkably long time, so he knows exactly what speaks to players. The stories that you're telling us right now operates on all three of those levels. This guy is a next level guy. There's no other way to fucking put it. Okay, last Insider's topic.
This is a great thing about Steve Kerr. He can always tell people, I played with and stood up to Michael Jordan. I played with and stood up to Greg Popovich and Phil Jackson. And if I need a video, I'll have the voice of the NBA do it.
Immediately. You know what I mean? Like, no, if I'm just casual, you just may want to listen to this.
I'll take the best.
Exactly right. Last insider's report. Since the last time we spoke, the Warriors finished off the sweep of the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're now 3-0. A lot of portions of that game we could jump down to, but here's the one I want to hear about. The cameras illustrated that Prince showed up to the game, which was just about as random as I could possibly imagine. I didn't even know he was a basketball fan. Does this era of hoop players know who the hell Prince is? Did that register with them? Did they talk about it? I mean, tell me about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody knows who Prince is. Sean Livingston had the great line that he was fascinated to meet him, but his rookie fro was better than Prince's. They in the locker room, they talk before the game, like, if your girl's looking at Prince, are you worried about it? So they all know who Prince is for sure, but I don't think that makes him a basketball fan. I think his reaction to the game declares that he is not a basketball fan.
You know, I head faked you. One last question about the Thunder. You may not know this. I don't know what kind of level your insiderdom reaches, but Kyle Singler. Is he a member of the Hitler Youth?
I don't know what to do with that.
You're not sure about that? I mean, I've never seen anybody who looked whiter than Kyle Singler. So if you do have any information there, I'd love to hear it. If not, I mean, we can move on.
We might. I guess the Warriors could see them in the second round. I'll check with them.
I don't know what to do with that. Kyle Singler that, I'd really appreciate the information. I mean, I won't hold it against him.
I see where you're going with
that. Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
It's worth
that.
The question.
All right, let's flip over to the Warriors' focus, and here's where I want to start. Apparently, during last night's game, Draymond took a front and center role during the halftime. And in fact, gave an impassioned speech. Told him that the defense is garbage, everybody needs to start stepping it up, and they really responded. One, did that happen?
Yeah,
Did you hear it? Were you by the locker room, or did you just hear reports of it?
Unfortunately, the Chronicle does not pay for enough money to stand outside the locker room.
You said that with the Lisa Salter stuff. Yeah. What does that mean? So different media outlets get different levels of access?
No, my understanding with the ESPN report, ABC report, was that she was waiting for the second half interview, and she happened to be outside the locker room. The Chronicle or anybody else who was trying to get close to the locker room during their session would not come close. The security would say, come on, man, okay. What are you doing here? This is not your place. So we don't pay enough money to be there. We ask people afterward.
And they verified yesterday Draymond did step in front.
Yeah, and it sounded like it was good. Like, I think he learned in Oklahoma City there's a point that you take it to, but yesterday he realized what you do is point at yourself, say, I'm not playing good defense, and the rest of us aren't either. And that resonated with the guys. And all of a sudden, in the second half, you're down Andre Iguodala and Festus Ezeli, two of your best defenders. And you now have to fly around and play this switching, rotating defense. And that's what he said. And he pointed at himself and he said, we've got to do this. We've got to do this together. And that resonated and people did it. And then for all the people who are saying that him and Kerr have a tiff, Draymond Green was the guy who presented the game ball to Steve Kerr after
exactly
the game.
Exactly right. I love that portion of it. I love that it showed that obviously any possible problem between the two is completely media made up. But I also liked that generally speaking, national media likes problems, not solutions, right?
Yeah.
Draymond's passion becomes a problem. We hear about it nonstop, and oh my God, is this going to split this team apart? Draymond's passion creates a solution. It leads to a win. Nobody even picks up the story. You know, I pulled it from you, thank God. You were actually on top of it, but we didn't hear something from ESPN. CBS didn't jump on it. I mean, none
but
of
the
these war, national
the
media.
Warriors are a little bit that way too. Like Kobe said early in the year, like, if there's no inner conflict, how are they going to be interesting?
Right.
How are they going to be champions again? And there really isn't a ton of inner conflict. You're always looking for this story arc. And with this team, it's 40-4, 50-5, 60-6. The story arc hasn't hit anything yet. There might have been a blip in Oklahoma City.
Right.
And then they all laughed about it and flew home on the plane dancing. Like, you know, there hasn't been a blip. There hasn't been any inner conflict.
I mean, how much of that, though, last night was the fact that, number one, it wasn't a nationally televised game. So you didn't even have the national media there. Like, even on League Pass, my dad said they didn't air it in HD.
But wait a minute. It, let's say last night he does a big speech and it's identical to the one that we did hear about, right? He goes in there and says, you know, I'm not a robot. I hate everybody. I'm taking off my shoes. I'm not playing. Even though the national media wasn't there, we would be reading about that left, right, and center today, right? There's no way that that thing would have disappeared the way that his successful speech did.
The report might not have come out the same because nobody would have heard it firsthand, but I can guarantee you that I know all the security guards around that locker room, and if that happened, it would have been in the paper.
Yeah, and it would have made every paper. Yeah. It would have been the same kind of wildfire story that we heard before, man.
Well, how much of last night's kind of second half turn? Well, I mean, by the time the second half came around, they were actually in pretty good shape, but what I found interesting was that New Orleans was started the game by switching everything, like one through five, they just switched everything, and it kind of befuddled the Warriors. Now, I agree they weren't playing good defense at the same time, but they were also kind of throwing it down to the post and doing these ISOs to try to take advantage of these switching, and that wasn't working. How much was the actual improvement on defense versus how much was it did they realize we need to just keep moving the ball?
With that hat on, all I heard you say was the word Washington Wizards like maybe 50 times.
Of course. I mean,
I just couldn't concentrate.
As usual, you dismiss my actual good takes and aren't actually listening to them because you can't really handle my actual.
I can't.
As usual, it was a great point.
Did you enjoy that? Yeah.
Darren Erman came up with a fantastic defense that the Warriors are going to have to deal with at some point, right? And it's the old thing that Nelly used to say, like, I'll guard your big guy who can't score on the post with a small. Go ahead, throw it down there. And that's what they kept doing with Draymond Green and Andrew Bogut. These are not post players. And it doesn't matter if you're guarding with Tony Douglas.
Right, it wasn't.
It doesn't matter.
Douglas can keep him out enough to have it be like a four-foot hook shot, which Bogut still can't hit.
That's not good offense. Your good offense is when you pass it around the perimeter and eventually get an open three-point shot, right? That's how the Warriors work their thing. So they fell exactly into what New Orleans wanted them to do, but as usual, the Warriors are smart and they're better coached and more talented, and within 6 minutes they figured that out. And then in the second half, defensively, they were fantastic, and that changed everything.
Because of the speech, presumably by Draymond, no?
I think it had something to do with that, yeah.
Exactly right. All right, since our last podcast, the Warriors, in fact, did suffer a loss, an embarrassing one, against the Lakers. I got enough text messages to kill a small horse with that. Wanted to use that small horse line.
Why would you kill a small horse?
I'm just telling you. Imagine how many text messages it would take to kill a small horse. I mean, so many.
Zero.
That's how many I received.
Messages would never kill a small
unless
horse.
Unless you get enough. That's what I am telling you.
Nobody would want to kill a small horse.
My God, let's move on.
The biggest detail is the small horse that no one would want to kill.
What do we take away from that? Does it mean anything? Does it? It was just a blip along an 82-game season. What did that mean to you?
The biggest thing I take away from that is no one will want to kill a small horse.
I will answer my own question there. Here's what the hell I took away from it. I think it really underlined how impressive it is what the Warriors are doing. This is the National Basketball Association. Every team has players who are phenomenally good at this sport. If you take anybody for granted, if you come with anything less than your B-plus game, you can lose. And we saw that against a team that everyone has written off. So the fact that the Warriors are able to speed towards perhaps 73 wins in this league shows you just how incredible what's happening, right? I mean, this can't happen unless you can bring excellence on nightly, every single possession basis. And we saw that in L.A.
I would take from it that the Warriors should forfeit every regular season game in L.A. for the rest of man time.
Why? Why do you say that?
They take their families there, so that's an extra distraction. They all go shopping, that's a distraction. They all go out that night, that's an extra distraction. They don't have breakfast the next morning, they don't have shoot around, and they show up and they're awful.
Yeah, and it was a 12:30 start on a Sunday.
Why even make the trip? Like, if you're just going to go for a holiday, say that's what it is.
And just take the loss.
Yeah, why show up for the game?
Here's something that stuck out to me. The Warriors are down 18, fourth quarter, game's over. Camera pans over to the bench, and it shows Draymond and Steph. Steph's got the towel over his head, so does Draymond, and they are laughing. Yeah. They're laughing hysterically.
Yeah.
Problem?
Probably talking about their credit card that just got run up in the shopping spree.
Does that bother you? This team is now getting their butts kicked by a Lakers team that is far crappier. Does it bother you that they're laughing on the bench?
At that time, they were, 50-6? 53-6?
All right, let me ask you it a different way. They're chasing Jordan's Bulls, right? In 1996, Jordan's playing a team.
He won last.
All right, Jordan's playing a team who is as terrible the Lakers are. They're down 18. Somebody leans over to tell him a joke. What happens?
They get punched in the face.
Viciously punched in the face.
And then he goes back, checks himself back into the game, and scores 18
straight. All the way back while punching every opponent in the face. All right, so with that as our backdrop, does it bother you that this team doesn't bring the same F you, I will die before I lose to you passion?
No, because this is a totally different situation. You got to remember, Jordan... The Bulls had just lost. He had just gone to play baseball. He had come back on a rampage.
You mean was suspended secretly for gambling?
Right. But this Warriors team is different. Like, they're competitive as can be with each other. But in the games, they play with great joy. And they didn't show up in L.A., and they knew it. And they had great joy on the bench, and then they went home. It was not a big deal.
Did it bother you, Scott? Come on, Scotty.
You know what? It's been something that I'm trying to grapple with, which is kind of how I was treated as a high school player and what my coach would have felt versus like how NBA players should be treated. If that, I mean, it happened to me at times in high school where players were laughing on the bench on a loss. We got ripped. We had to run extra the next day. So my mindset is like they should not be laughing. But these are professionals. Sometimes I screw up in my professional job, and you know, to not be able to laugh at yourself, it just doesn't seem right.
Of course you guys are right. It hit me in a weird way because there are so few losses. When you watch them, it's like watching water go uphill. You know, like this whole thing is screwed up. I'm not sure what's happening. And then to show the people who I think would take it as hard as I am, and they're not. You know, they've moved on, and certainly that's the healthy approach, and that's exactly what they should be doing. But it did. It made me write a note on the game, like, why is this happening? And it came to that Jordan comparison.
It was weird in the post-game locker room because I expected them to at least put that face on, to be like, oh, my goodness, we just lost. Yeah. And instead, Andrew Bogut was laughing about something that was on the wipe-off board, and the players were like, we just lost in L.A. We're going home, you know? And it was weird. Like, they didn't even try to, like, perform. They were just like, it happens.
And
they're so stinking good and so fun at being good that you were just like, okay, yeah, they're right. They're right.
And they've won every game since. So, I mean, what am I going to say? Home games. Here's what struck me recently. Generally speaking, home games should be a completely stress-free affair. You lose them, that's a problem, but you shouldn't be worried about it. And because of the Warriors' current home win streak, which is historic, I feel now like there's this extra amount of pressure on each home game. Each one almost feels like a playoff game. Should they lose it, it's going to be a really big deal. I view that as a downside. Is it? I mean, do you feel any extra tension before games and home games, or is that something that I'm just imagining?
I feel like you wet your pants a lot.
I do. You have no idea. It's a medical condition. I don't need your judgment, Rusty. Just answer the question.
This team has been playing the Super Bowl since game one of the year. They started the season 24-0 on a historic run. And by the time it was over, they had gone so far into the chase of 73 wins that they couldn't turn back. Little carrots have come up along the way about win streaks at home and going undefeated at home and being the number one seed and all this stuff. They're just like, who cares?
Really?
Yeah. Like, when they get close to it, they're like, oh, that's something else we can do. We might as well do that. But they don't care. They wanted to go 82-0. It didn't happen. They're gonna do something else.
Let me ask it this way: did you think that question was interesting?
No,
not at all.
I mean, it was a little interesting that you might have
fired up.
It did.
You might have wet your pants. That was interesting.
Again, a little bit. At least add again. Show me some respect, man.
That was a good question.
This week, the All-World Jealousy Tour continued. It was Stack Jack again. In fact, just today, he was talking to TMZ and went out of his way to tell us
that... It's one of my favorite guys, by the way.
Captain Jack is the man. Unfortunately enough, for this interview, he was, in fact, wearing pants. And what he said was, Steph Curry is having a great season, but as of right now, is not a top five player of all time. Too early to have that conversation. We don't even have to jump down that rabbit hole. What I'm wondering is, what is it about these players, this team, that is causing everyone to come out of the woodwork and give their opinion?
It's the media's fault.
Why?
We're trying to put historical context on something that we can't understand. We're watching a season that's never happened before. And so what we do is we try to go back to people who have seen similar seasons or can put some context on what we're watching. And the problem is you can't probably in one day get all 15 guys from the 1995-96 Chicago Bulls to explain exactly what it was like. So what you do is you reach out to whoever you can. And some people, like Stack Jack, one of my favorite people.
Is he one of your favorite people?
He doesn't have any relevance in this situation, right? Like he's never been on a team like this. He's played on some Spurs teams that were okay. Yeah. He was on a We Believe team right. that took him back to the playoffs.
But didn't get out of the second round.
But yeah, right. it didn't have any relevance. So you got to take it with a grain of salt. You got to think about who you're hearing from. And it's hard. How you put historic relevance on something that isn't done yet and doesn't relate, it's very hard. Like somebody, Grant Hill said to me the other day, like, would Wilt Chamberlain destroy Shaquille O'Neal or would Shaquille O'Neal destroy Wilt Chamberlain? We don't know. And no matter how many smart minds you put on that, we don't know. We'll never know. That's the right answer. But instead, people want to come up with an opinion for it. And so somebody would say, well, Wilt would win or Shaq would win. We don't know. We don't know what Steph would do against the other teams.
So it's almost a compliment. These guys are so historic that we find ourselves trying to put them into context prematurely kind of
thing. Sure, absolutely.
Last insider's report has to do with the other Splash Brother. In some ways, Steph's brilliance has us not paying attention to how good Klay has been playing. Just recently, you know, Big Smokey put up 37 against Portland. Here's my question for you. Could Smokey be the best player on a championship team?
Absolutely.
You think so? Really?
Yeah.
Let me ask it a different way. If Curry was not a member of this team, how good are the Warriors? How many wins do they get in a season?
Well, they'd be 2-1.
How many wins do they get in a season?
64.
You really believe that? Would they be a championship contender without Curry?
Sure.
Wow. Do you agree with that, Scott?
Klay Thompson's good, man. He's really good.
I mean, you've been saying that for
He's
years.
He's really good.
You've been saying that for years.
They have Andre Iguodala and Andrew Bogut and Draymond Green, who were all in the conversation to be the defensive player of the year. Klay Thompson's the best defensive player on the team.
And he has an awesome nickname.
Unless he's playing off the ball, because he can't somehow keep his eye between the ball and defender. But,
is that Kevin Love trade still out there?
Do you agree with what he said? Could a team anchored by Klay Thompson be a championship?
And
team?
Offensively, no, he changes the grid. He's fantastic.
Absolutely not.
I mean, maybe I've been so spoiled by Steph that it's impossible even to look beyond it. I can't see a team anchored by him when he doesn't have the personality. You would need somebody else really pushing it.
He doesn't have to dance to win the championship. The Spurs won a lot of them.
But I don't think he wants to be the focal point. He does everything he can to avoid being the focal point, not only of media attention.
He'll just keep being the best defender and change the grid on offense and win titles.
I guess we'll have to agree to disagree, man. Let's move on to a brand new segment, one I've been fired up about all week. Never done it, first time, and it is called We've Got Hate Mail. Naturally speaking, you guys have been remarkably nice. We get mail all the time, really positive things. We appreciate the hell out of that. But the positive stuff is entertaining, not at all. Luckily enough, we get a ton of really nasty stuff, too. And by we, really, I mean me.
Yeah, why do you say we?
Yeah, really, I mean me. And that stuff is. So here's the concept of we or I have hate mail. I'm going to read you guys the hate mail, and then three things I want all of us to do. One, guess the age. Two, guess the person's profession. Three, score the actual hate mail. Give me a grade out of 1 out of 10, all right? This one came from somebody named either Free John or John Free on the Warriors World Forum. I forgot to write down his name, so for that I apologize. Here's his actual take. Quote, the Rusty segments are must-hear, really good. And you, and then parenthetically, if you are the mellow voice dude, do a good job of keeping things moving and asking good questions, etc. And I gather your initiative is why the podcast even exists, so thanks for that. But my personal feedback is that many of your attempts at getting edgy are just dreadful. For my personal taste, when your internal voice is thinking of something and then, in quotation marks, funny, you should just dial it back a little, and then I can stop fast-forwarding till your voice stops. Yeah. Other than that, keep up the good work. Thanks. Exclamation point. I will go first here. I'm thinking this guy's a little bit older just because he used the word dreadful. So I'm going to go about 45, 46, some kind of a canned profession because it means so much to him to reach out. So accountant, but score, I'm saying like 9, man. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I'm going to fast forward till your voice stops. That cut me deep. That hurt, man. Like, I read this to my mom. Like, I was literally like, what's happening? Why is this guy fast forward? Why even listen if you hate my voice so much? So, I mean, John Free, Free John, whatever it is. Nicely played, man. Hopefully your accounting business is going well, and happy 46th birthday. But this it hurt me. It hurt me, gentlemen. What do you guys think?
Well, there's such great pleasure once he fast forwarded beyond your voice. To that silence or to one of Scattier-eyes tones.
I mean, if I was to guess this guy's age, profession, and whatnot, I'd probably say exactly my age and profession because...
It was you.
That was...
You filthy bastard. Damn it, Scott.
That was pretty close to my take. Yeah.
Give me a score. Honestly, what do you got? I mean, real score. Out of 10.
You know, as somebody who has to edit your voice, I would never consider it mellow because I have to... deal with your inflection.
Scott.
So
oh
like,
my God, it was Scott.
You know, I would give this is 11 out of 10. Is that on the table?
Yeah. Sure. No, you can give it to him. Rusty, give him a score.
He got an 8. I mean, I like his take on the insider and on me in general.
Anything else? You didn't like the fast forward line?
I don't like anything that takes effort to get to the point. So.
I mean, let the record reflect. A single tear is flying down my face and has been since I read this take. Again, you cut me deep. It was what it was, which leads me to the last and my favorite segment of the show, story time.
Wait, I wanted more hatred.
That's we're just one.
That was the best segment.
Just one at a time. Trust me, we will have a lot of these. It's not just Free John or John Free who has takes about my mellow but
more hate mail,
please. Annoying voice. Yeah. If you have any takes you'd like to send, please remember we can be reached at warriorsettle@gmail.com, which leads to story time with Uncle Rusty. And this week, what I'd like to hear about is Harrison Barnes.
Harrison Barnes is a great story.
A dump taker during, we know,
he does take dumps during the national anthem. Most people don't know. Harrison Barnes has decided that he's going to present this personal image of being the senator, as Jim Barnett calls him. And so when everybody asks him a question, it's on camera, he has this governor, senator, politician take. He's actually very funny. And I got to hang out with him a little bit when he had a Make-A-Wish kid in town. And watching him eat Oreos, which he chose, that was the snack, and play video games with this kid was fantastic. And this year, a year later, he decided that he was going to send the child a gift. And the kid went right back and sent him a trophy for finishing second in that PlayStation basketball game. And to me, that was great for Harrison to get someone to punch him right back with the jokes. And I know a lot of people don't get to see how funny he is, but he's really funny.
I like that kid. Did Harrison let him win?
Absolutely not. Kid just whooped him.
Please remember, you guys, we really appreciate you listening. Huge fun every week, certainly true this week. If you want to reach out, hate mail or otherwise, as I mentioned not 30 seconds ago, our email address remains warriorshuddle@gmail.com. You want to shoot us a tweet or hit us on Twitter, we are at Warriors Huddle. Rusty continues to refuse to tell us his Twitter account.
Nobody wants to send me hate mail.
Okay, there you go. Our website is warriorsworld.net. Please remember, download the SeatGeek app and use the promo code GSW. Will really help you out, and equally as important, will help us out. And also, we're on a bunch of podcasting services, including iTunes. Get out there and rate us.
Can we give something away?
5 stars, even if you love us. Scotty, we got anything to give away?
Not right now.
Unbelievable, Scotty. Okay.
Now you got to retape that.
Yeah, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. If your hate mail is headed towards anywhere, you're going to want to hood and throw it towards Scott. We appreciate you listening, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Good.